Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Body Wisdom Podcast, where we discuss the mind-body connection and its relationship to health and well-being. I'm very excited about today's very special guest, Lena Hart, who is joining us all the way from San Francisco, California. Lena Hart is currently the resident Alexander Technique teacher at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco and has a private practice in San Francisco and Walnut Creek, California. As an experienced postural and ergonomic specialist, Lena helps clients become aware of the harmful, habitual physical choices they make as a person. She specializes in helping performers, techies, persons struggling with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease, and retirees improve their abilities and decrease pain. Current and previous students include those who work at Google, PETA, AAU, University of Tennessee, and Witten Laser Eye. Whether it be stage fright or back pain, Lena helps her students through what she has learned with a technique. She is a graduate of the Alexander Education Center of Berkeley and received her MFA from the University of Tennessee and her BA from Washington University in St. Louis. Hi, Lena, and welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you. And I love, you know, California. So I'd love to hear how San Francisco is these days.
Well, today is really beautiful. It's 70s and it's gorgeous outside. And COVID feels like I'm cautiously optimistic. It's calming down. People are starting to get out. And I've started to see people in person again, which is really nice. All masked up and goggled up and everything, but it's really fun.
That's great. Yeah, that's great to be able to get back into teaching. I know I miss that so much. It's not quite that optimistic in Florida. I think it's getting that way, but we're not quite there in my opinion, but I look forward to that day to get my hands back to work.
I was so excited. I'm double vaccinated now, so I'm very excited.
That is exciting. Oh, that is so congratulations. That is
Thank
very
you.
Exciting.
Thank
you. It's like, it seems like a faraway dream to have life back to normal, but it might be sooner than I think we think, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
So hopefully I'll be able to make it out to California one of these days.
I'd love that. It'd be so much fun to exchange. That would be so great.
That would be amazing. And maybe go to like Napa Valley or something.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, something to look forward to. So Lena, I wanted to talk to you about a few things today, but first I wanted to just learn from you. How did you discover the Alexander Technique?
Well, my introduction to the Alexander Technique was a little different than many of the other Alexander Technique teachers that I've met. Mine was through the performing arts. So I didn't have any body pain or neck pain. I got introduced in an acting 2 class in my undergrad at WashU in St. Louis. I had a teacher in training, David Marchant, came in. He was a wonderful dance teacher. I knew him as a dance teacher, but he was studying to be an Alexander Technique teacher. And he came into our Acting 2 class, and it was introduced to us as, this is going to help make your acting better. And I was, oh, okay, great. And we all sat in a circle in chairs, and he was walking around and putting hands on people's heads, top of their heads and back of their necks, and telling them to kind of loosen their head and could they give up their head to allow him to move it for them. And as he was going from person to person, I was honestly thinking, I was super skeptical, and I was honestly thinking, what is this voodoo, weird actors will do anything. Jeez, oh my God, this is such a waste of time, right? And then he comes over to me and, you know, charms me immediately and says, I'm going to put my hand on the back of your head. And is it okay? Do I have permission to move your head for you? And I said, yeah, sure. Okay, sure. Fine. No problem. Not realizing how tight I really was. And at first he couldn't move my head at all. Not at all. Not even like quarter of an inch. And then he said, so see if you can just allow me to move your head for you. And I realized there was something I had to let go of. I had to stop holding something, which I didn't know what that something was, but I had to stop holding it. And I did. And the weirdest thing happened. My senses came alive like I was a superhero. all of a sudden. I felt like I had had horse blinders on and they got removed all of a sudden. I felt like I could smell things in the room. I could hear them. And I felt a little bit like time was slowing down and stretching out. And I was like, ooh, this is a cool feeling that I don't feel I've ever experienced. And I did a scene right afterwards, right after he did that with me. And the lines just came to me easily. My emotional life was just happening. There was no trying. There was no trying whatsoever. It was just happening to me. I could see my scene partner and see like the details of what they were doing. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen them on stage with me before, ever. And everything just flowed. So pretty much from that moment on, I was hooked. And I was like, I don't know what this thing is, this Alexander technique, what a weird name, but I'm in, I'm doing it, whatever it is. And so when I moved to New York, after I graduated, I sought out a teacher pretty much as soon as I rented an apartment. And that teacher actually was on your podcast, Barrett Arkaya. Mm-hmm. And yes. She became one of my great, great teachers. And I just adore her. I love her.
Me too.
Yeah. And so then, and I also, I think maybe in that first day, I knew I was going to get trained. I wanted to be I wanted the training. I like wanted to know this deeply. I just didn't know when I was going to do it. And so eventually it worked out with my life and I moved out to Berkeley and went to school, and it really has been life-changing for me.
That's amazing. Well, your first experience sounds just incredible. It just sounds, I don't know if I've heard of anyone having such a really an awakening quite like that in a first lesson. You were ready for it. It seems like you were really ready for it, because to sense your senses, most people, you know, I know myself, I was like, what is this thing? You know, what is this? It took me 6 months of being in a class, of having to take, you know, AT classes also in drama school. And I'm like, what is this thing? Like, why do we have to get in and out of a chair? You know, there were no senses awakened. No, nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably the kudos go to David Marchand, because he was super patient with me. And I think he found my skepticism fun. You know, it didn't put him off at all. So that was great. And now when I have super skeptical students, I do enjoy them, because I guess I see myself and then I'm like, good, be skeptical. That's how you should be.
Yeah. Well, sure. Just like it takes a lot of time to build those habits, it takes a lot of time to unlearn them. But I'm amazed by your work. I'm a huge fan of your work. I've seen your videos. Thank you. You have such touching videos on YouTube with your work with people with Parkinson's disease. And I know you do a lot of work with actors as well. And with your background, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Is there a different approach that you use when you give lessons to people that come with, you know, traditional types of chronic pain versus people who come in for performance?
I would say that I do tailor the lesson to my clients' goals. That part is definitely true. And I'm definitely pointing out throughout the lesson from early on how the process of what we're doing is going to help them achieve the goal that they want. That being said, I am teaching the same principles over and over, no matter who the client is. So if it's a person who's living with Parkinson's disease, they're coming in usually because of balance issues and trying to find the ground again and know where it is and feel secure again. And if it's a person who's an actor who's really looking to become freer and more alive and dynamic and not as what they'll usually come in thinking, they're coming in to not be nervous anymore. That's usually the purpose of their coming in. And then quickly though, we are teaching the what I call the three main principles of the technique, which is awareness, them becoming aware of the habits that are perhaps in the way of their goal, them being able to pause that, which Alexander called inhibition and I call pausing, and being able to pause that habit. And then when you do pause that habit, being able to redirect your energy, being able to redirect your focus. So you take all that freed up energy and you focus it. And you do focus it differently when you're trying to balance versus affect an audience. then it is slightly different. The way that I find that I teach direction is different for different people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a beautiful way to explain it too.
Thanks.
I also was really intrigued by an article that you wrote for our publication, our Body Wisdom publication, and it's Mastering Your Performance. And it's kind of the idea of our podcast is really learning how to master your performance, because performance is something that we do whether we're professional actors or musicians, or we have different things that we need to make a performance for, like a speech or getting up in front of a room of people and just talk. And a lot of people have anxiety about that. So I wanted to ask you a little bit how you came up with the idea to write this article, and also if you could tell us a little bit what it's about.
Yeah. Well, I would say 90% of my clientele are performers. So that's made up of actors, musicians, singers, and people who are coming to me for public speaking. And I started to realize as I was working with my other 10% of people that they are also working on performance, because what I'm really working on is how they go about dealing with their anxiety and dealing with their nervousness. And anxiety sounds like a really big word, like, ooh, anxiety, but we get anxious throughout the day in teeny tiny little ways that often we're not even aware of. Anytime we feel pressure to do something, in fact, anytime we go into what Alexander called end gaining, or I've kind of nicknamed get it done mode, whenever we're in get it done mode, or for performers, get it right mode, which is actually the same darn thing, whenever we're in one of these modes, we set off this whole alarm system. And the alarm system often shoots ourselves in the foot. We end up messing up. We end up not doing the activity as well as we could have because we give in to the tightness in our body, or we give in to the anxiety, and we start to chase our tail a bit. So I had been writing actually about performance and performance anxiety a lot. And every time I wrote something, it felt a little muddled. It felt like I was all over the place in trying to describe it. And it never feels that way when I'm teaching someone individually, because we're talking about a very specific issue that they are dealing with. And so I realized it's kind of general, it's bigger, right? Everybody's dealing with it. And it can happen when you're in a meeting with your boss and they ask you to explain why your numbers are down. Right there in that moment, you're just answering a question. But it's like when you were a kid and you were called upon to read in front of the class, nobody taught you how to deal with yourself when that happens. We never learn that. And I kind of, I guess, have made it my mission to help people with that feeling, that uncomfortable feeling of nervousness.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is such a wonderful way of putting it. I love that example of not teaching us how to do things. It's kind of like what I tell my students sometimes also, is that you don't really learn how to use your body when you're a kid. We have so many different classes. We have math, we have science, we have English. We even have physical education class, but you're not really learning how to use your body in these classes. You're doing things. You're constantly doing things. But
yeah,
I love that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, right. Physical education in school. And I often say this to people as well. You know, you're learning how to climb a rope or run a mile, or trying to get out of climbing the rope or running the mile. That's mostly what that class is.
Right. Right. It's a lot of end gaining, I think, in these classes. So in your article, you talk about something that I think is so important that so many people can relate to, is this idea of fight or flight when it comes to performing or life in general. Could you just share a little bit more about that from your article?
Yeah. The fight or flight response is a natural human survival response. It's an evolutionary response to get us out of danger. So we all have it. It's natural. We're supposed to have it. And the main problem with it is our brain thinks, oh, there's a lion in the room. Oh my gosh, there's a lion in the room. There's a lion in the room. And so it sends a signal down to our adrenal glands, which are down on top of our kidneys. And it asks our adrenal glands to pour out two hormones, especially adrenaline and cortisol. And these particular hormones are made for us to be able to run away from the danger or to fight the danger or to freeze from the danger. So actually, really, technically, it's fight, flight, or freeze. People have three of these different responses. And these particular responses, when you don't do anything with them, kind of feed upon you, and they just get bigger and bigger, and they make you feel really uncomfortable. And the symptoms of fight, flight, freeze is usually something like feeling nauseated, shaking. I get really cold hands and cold feet. Some people start to stutter. There's so many different things that can happen, and each person is individual in the symptoms that they get to fight, flight, or freeze. For performance anxiety, that response is actually really important and necessary. So I think about that fight, flight, or freeze response as not a bad thing actually at all, even though it's quite uncomfortable at first. It's like Powerade. It's like juice that I need. And so when you start to reframe it like that, you can use it actually. Your body is providing you with the juice you need not to do something ordinary, right? This doesn't happen when you're brushing your teeth. You don't get these feelings when you're brushing your teeth for an ordinary activity. But your body knows, she wants to do something extraordinary. She wants to do something extraordinary, and I got to give her energy. And so it does. But if you don't know where to put that energy, it just cycles back on yourself, makes you think about yourself, makes you worry and even more anxious. And it can really get in the way of performing at your best.
That's wonderful. You also cited B.J. Fogg, and I think the book Tiny Habits, is that the book? Yes. And you explained it so nicely. You gave an example, a few examples of how the principles of B.J. Fogg's book, Tiny Habits, and also some principles of the Alexander Technique worked together really well. And I was wondering if you could share some of those tips with our listeners.
Yeah. So BJ Fogg, which I love him. He's a sweet, sweet man. And I heard him on a podcast and I was, this guy is so great. And he's not really thinking anything new. He's a behavior scientist at Stanford. So he studies behaviors and how we make behaviors, how we change behaviors, which really, you know, this is what Alexander Technique teachers do as well. And what he found is a really simple, clear way to give you a path forward. I think sometimes I'll just speak about myself as an Alexander teacher. A person would come into the studio. They'd be doing so great. They'd feel light. They'd feel alive. They'd feel dynamic. Their performance was fantastic. And then they would go away and go do their performance, and they would try to have that feeling again, but they wouldn't quite remember to go through the process to get to that feeling again. And so I had been actively looking for a good way to help my students when they weren't with me to follow the process, right? And to like want to do the process part. And he comes up with what he calls a recipe card. And the first part of this recipe card is finding a prompt that's kind of like a little alarm bell that is going to help you practice this new behavior that you want to achieve. So I was thinking about performance anxiety, and there's a built-in prompt, and that is your feelings of nervousness. So when you feel nervous, you can say, it's here. The prompt is here. The juice is here. So that's going to make me wake up, be aware that it's here. And that means now I can practice my second step, which is I'm going to what I call bubble. So that's really just softening my body and expanding it out in all directions into this bubble. I'm going to bubble, and then I'm going to direct my energy, if I'm an actor, at my scene partner. So I get to then direct it, I get to focus it out, and I'm going to practice this. So I was actually working with a young woman today who has a really hard time with acting. She's an actress. She has a hard time playing her objective in a scene. She gets there, the camera is on, and all of a sudden she starts thinking about what she looks like, if she's going to be good enough, all of these anxieties and worries. So I said, okay, so for 1 minute a day, this is what you're going to do. You're going to find your prompt. And for her, that was putting down her phone in the morning, because she's going to be practicing playing objective. So when she puts her phone down in the morning, she looks over at her boyfriend, who she says is always there. So I was like, great, awesome. And I said, okay, you're going to choose an objective. You're going to choose to make him smile, right? That's it. Just every morning. And then you're going to do the third step. You're going to celebrate. And this was news to me that BJ Fogg wrote about, that celebrating a win, celebrating practicing something, actually wires it wires the behavior into your brain faster, right? As opposed to, I didn't do it. That doesn't wire anything into your brain, but a positive celebration wires it in really fast. And so I want people to use that nervousness, say, oh, I'm nervous. Good. Okay. That's my prompt to expand in all directions, and then focus out and start to touch either my scene partner energetically, if I'm an athlete, or if even if I'm an amateur athlete and I'm just playing something like golf, I'm going to expand into the ball, forward and up into the ball. And then I'm going to allow the club to do the work for me. Same thing if you are sitting in a staff meeting and your boss says, why are your numbers down, Lena? And they're coming at you with that kind of negative energy, and you start to feel the nervousness. You go, ah, good, it's here. The juice is here to help me. Okay, I'm going to expand into her. I'm going to soften into her, and I'm going to make that lady smile. It won't even matter what's coming out of my mouth. I'm going to make her smile. And then you explain the numbers with your words, but really what you're imagining is maybe pinching her cheek. Right. And it's really quite amazing that when you start sending actions in this way, even people who are not actors, right, even people who are public speakers or just at work, the response is incredible. And I've had so many students come back who are not actors, you know, who are honestly in Silicon Valley. And they said, you won't believe what happened today. I just decided I was going to like squeeze her little cheeks as I was telling her why, you know, this algorithm wasn't working. And she smiled at me and she's like, well, just keep working on it. And, that was never our response before. It's never the response.
Wow.
Like, That's great. And it's incredible. It's amazing. It is. It really is incredible.
It's a brilliant and clever idea. You know, I think that Alexander Technique can be such a nice supplement to pretty much everything. It's just a way of life, really. But to apply principles of other, you know, behavioral practices, then just have that foundation with the Alexander Technique, I think is just a wonderful, wonderful way to help students. I love that. I haven't even heard of that. So that was really interesting to hear. Yeah. And I'm so happy that it's helping them. Your students.
Yeah. And it helped me as well. Quite honestly, I was like, I of course, you know, experimented on myself first because I wanted to make sure it worked before. And, you know, I got myself flossing more. I got myself putting on hand lotion more. I mean, all these tiny little behavioral habit changes that I wanted to add in, and then also habit changes that I wanted to replace. It really helped me to tie the two together and to experiment with what worked and what doesn't work.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I have learned so much today from you. So many creative ideas. I loved your article so much. I'm so happy to have it as a part of our publication.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad we got to chat and finally as close to in person as can be expected right now in these times. And I wanted to ask you before we finish up today, any kind of final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners today?
I guess I would say that I think the key to helping people perform to their best ability is helping them find a way to enjoy the process of rehearsing. And rehearsing takes time, and it doesn't have to be rehearsing the whole thing. You can rehearse just the very beginning of the process over and over and over again and find enjoyment. And that's that little celebration thing at the end of it, like, oh, I loosened my neck. Yay, good, I did it. And even if I do that after I pee every day, say right, that I pee and then I loosen my neck and woohoo, I did it. It's really amazing. It sounds so silly, but it actually ends up rewiring the brain so fast. And then loosening their neck after they pee, if that's the example that you use, because it's kind of fun and funny, and you're really teaching them to almost make fun of it and enjoy the process. They start to understand that if you want that wonderful end result, that goal, you have to focus on the pathway to it. And I feel like I've heard that so many times said in so many different ways. But what I liked about incorporating BJ Fogg's book and ideas with the Alexander technique is this gives us a very clear map and a very easy way to practice and then expand upon that. And people really understand it. It's very simple. It's very clear, which I'm a big proponent of, because I think even for me, the Alexander technique can get a little heady sometimes and up in the clouds. And I like things that are clear and practical and a way forward. So for me, it's really important to not just practice, for example, pausing the habit, but pausing the habit and then doing something else, right? Actually directing, which is really important, I think, for people working with performance anxiety and high performance. They need to have something to do, and you have to give them that direction. You have to give them something to think about after the pause.
I agree with you. I think it is important, especially for beginners, to give them mm-hmm. some kind of direction, because when we just stop with inhibition, it's like, well, what do I do? You know, because they want to know what to do. And so just giving them like the potential to have these small wins, I think is just it's kind of setting them off in a great direction, really.
That's right. And if you don't really feel like you've achieved anything, why continue it? And so you have to have like little breadcrumbs here and then here and then here. And it makes it so much more fulfilling, you know, to be practicing the process.
I love that. It's very wise. I think that's a great idea. I'm going to try that. I love that idea, little breadcrumbs, because, you know, people are always, you know, in lessons, well, what exercises can I do, right? What they want to do their exercise. They're like, well, I don't really give exercises, but it becomes very vague. You know, it's like, well, what can I do? And it's like, well, you should do semi-supine. I think that's a great idea. You know, so okay, what else? And they want. And so I think when you give little like kind of micro opportunities to just have small wins, I think it just really sets them up to be more engaged in the process to see.
I agree. And it sounded like what you said to me was you're giving them something small and very specific. And so the more specific you are, the better the outcome, right? Even if it's a tiny thing, when you're specific about, here's what to do, here's what you're going to practice this week, peeing and freeing your neck, peeing and freeing your neck and celebrating. And that's it. That's your assignment for this week. Every time you pee, you free your neck. Yay, right? That's it. And people love it, quite honestly. They're, you know, it's they love having a specific plan. Mm-hmm. And what they always, of course, end up finding is it starts filtering into everything else in their life, so that they start freeing their neck, not just when they pee, but actually, well, oh yeah, it just occurred to me while I was drinking water, what happens if I did this? And so that was interesting. I tasted the water more. Did you notice that? Did you know that if you free your neck and drink water, you taste it more? I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, so I think that it also allows people to make their own, have their own epiphanies. And I think that's the indirect approach that works best, you know, with Alexander technique. So you give them this like, oh, there's that little breadcrumb, and then they get to find the other fun things around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the epiphanies, I think, are what keep people with the Alexander technique, is these discoveries. But I think it for some people like myself, it takes a really long time to get to the epiphanies. But the people, I think if it takes a long time, if you stick with it, there has to be something there, because I stuck with it, you know, even though there was like nothing going on. So I think it's wonderful. But it's great that you give, I think that it's just so creative. I'm going to try this. I love this, you know, like free your neck while you do a very mundane activity. I go to the bathroom every day, and it'll make it more fun for sure.
Yeah. Well, it was so amazing. It's how I got my daughter actually to make her bed. Right. So I was like, okay, so after you pee, you run back to your room and you make your bed, and then you party. And we rehearsed it. Right. So we went from her bed, and then we like scrambled out of bed, and we pretended like we were really sleepy. It was the morning, and then we pretended to pee, and then we pretended to walk back to the bed and like make the bed, and then party dance. Right. And we did it 10 times. And then she's pretty much done it almost every morning since. And, you know, she loves the little fun dance thing. And she loved, it was also a nice thing between us, because we could rehearse it together in a funny way and kind of make fun of it. And, you know, and then lo and behold, it implanted into her brain, and she's making her bed now.
I'm going to try that. These are just so many great tools. This is great. I'm going to try. It's fun. You know, and especially it speaks to their, like, is anything with, you know, bathroom is very appealing to small children.
Right. Exactly. Talk about. Yeah. Like, oh, mom's talking about me peeing. Okay.
That's great. Lena, thank you so much. You are such a delight. I had so much fun talking to you today.
Me too.
And I look forward to seeing you in person, hopefully soon.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Take care.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.